Hi, I'm Phil Davidson, and with me is Rockford Symphony Orchestra music director Stephen Larson. We are discussing the RSO's June 2021 chamber concert on the ComEd digital stage, featuring the works of Richard Strauss and Wolfgang Mozart. Both of the featured selections are for a wind chamber orchestra. Now, that is very different than what RSO attendees normally hear, is it not?
Yeah, we can say this is no strings attached, can't we? So to speak. Yes, it's much different. And it's intentional for the Holiday Pops concert. We used an all brass ensemble. For the fall, we used a string ensemble. We used a mixed ensemble for our last recording. And now this gives the woodwinds a chance to show what they can do. There's a lot of literature written for woodwinds, and it doesn't get performed in concerts a whole lot because there's a smaller audience, and because frankly, you put a woodwind ensemble in a big concert hall that's used to hosting symphony orchestras, and it's not quite as successful. It doesn't come across quite as forcefully. But this is a chance I look forward to showcasing a couple of the really great pieces of the woodwind ensemble literature.
Now, Richard Strauss was a German composer, and besides a composer, he had many other talents as well. But what musical eras is he considered to represent, and why do they describe it that way?
Late Romanticism, certainly, is when he, the era he grew up in and really mastered, the turn of the century in particular, where he wrote some of his works that are considered his greatest, turn of the end of the 19th, early 20th century. He's also considered, in some respects, one of the early modern composers, although he turned back from that largely. When he got to his opera, Elektra, he seemed to be ready to go over the edge into atonality, and then backed off. Perhaps he thought that was a dangerous area to go into. Maybe it was just not to his taste. He wanted to go back to more familiar territory, but he followed that very dissonant, hair-raising atonal opera Elektra with the very traditional backward-looking Rosenkavalier, very sentimental, very, very tonal. But still, when you looked at it very carefully, a lot of very, very modern techniques. He was just a master technician. As a composer, as a master of notes, of pitches, putting them together in beautiful and striking ways, but also in particularly of orchestration.
Now, his greatest success came with what types of works?
Two areas, principally. He's considered to be the master of the tone poem or the symphonic poem. His most frequently performed concert works, Don Juan, the Also sprach Zarathustra, the Don Quixote, those pieces are Till Eulenspiegel's Lustige Streiche. They get performed a lot by symphony orchestras all over the world. They're really audience favorites. They're brilliant pieces, and they all are. They share the trait of telling a story through music, without words, and they're enormously popular. That and his operas. He is considered to be one of the early 20th century's master of operas, and although they are quite large and difficult to perform, works like Der Rosenkavalier and Salome and Elektra are frequent guests in opera houses all over the world. Some of his later operas, they're not quite as often performed, but extremely beautiful. I'm a big favor of Ariadne auf Naxos, for instance, which is a very, very clever work. Lots of humor, but lots of unbelievably, just meltingly beautiful music, too.
Well, you're performing Strauss's Serenade in E flat, and I understand that this piece was composed when he was 17 years old.
Yes.
What was his personal assessment of this piece?
Well, looking back on it, Strauss was notoriously rather cynical in his view on life, and also, although he had an enormous ego, he could also be somewhat self-deprecating, and he didn't think very much of the piece in retrospect. Although, if for a 17-year-old, I wouldn't want to say that piece is a masterpiece, but certainly for a 17-year-old, this is an impressive piece of music. It shaped in great part by the presence of his father, who was one of the greatest horn players of the 19th century, was the principal horn for Richard Wagner and for his operas in Bayreuth, and who hated Wagner's music and anything really past the music of Mendelssohn that he thought was not really classical enough. He tried to drum this into Richard's head, and of course it didn't really stick. Richard loved Wagner's music and became a great fan. But you can hear the reverence for tradition, first of all, in this piece, the classical tradition of Mozart, of Beethoven, of Haydn, and also the skillful and brilliant but understated use of the four horns. And the four horns makes this piece somewhat unusual. Two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, a contrabassoon to add a bottom to the texture, and four horns. In an ensemble like this, you normally might find two horns, but four is maybe gilding the lily a little bit, but provides a beautiful, beautiful texture to the piece.
Well, I think you very well described what we're going to hear with this piece and its flow. So I presume.
Well, one other thing, though, before we go on, it's called a serenade for a purpose. Serenades are, well, they're meant to serenade you. They are tranquil pieces. They are not overly lively. There are no dancing jigs or anything like that in there. They're beautiful music, and this certainly. This qualifies as beautiful music. There's some wonderful, wonderful melodies, beautiful sonorities, beautiful use of the flutes in particular. But he's at 17 years old, he's already a master of instrumentation. That's very clear from this piece. And this is, by the way, a piece that I conducted on my master's recital many years ago at Northwestern University. I've done it since, but it's always been a favorite of mine because of this.
Well, then we move over to the second selection in the June Chamber Concert, which is Mozart's Serenade No. 10 in B-flat major. And, of course, there's been so much written about Mozart, and he only lived 35 years, but he produced so much, didn't he?
He wrote in every musical genre known at the time, every single one without exception, and most cases in great quantities and always brilliant. I don't think you can point to a single piece Mozart wrote in his entire lifetime that wasn't great. It was near perfect in many cases. And you really can't say that about almost any other composer, including Bach and Beethoven, some of the greats. Mozart just seemed to be incapable of writing anything bad. In this piece, you could say Serenade No. 10, he wrote a bunch of serenades. And like Strauss, this is a piece meant to entertain, not a piece to furrow your brow at, to think about great thoughts or to follow the turmoil and the Sturm und Drang of sonata form and the triumph of Beethoven and things like that. No, nothing like that in this piece. It's a serenade. It's meant for entertainment. I chose both pieces because they were serenades and because there is a connection between them. Strauss loved Mozart and studied Mozart very, very carefully. I don't know offhand whether Strauss knew the Grand Partita or whether he studied it or not. There certainly don't seem to be similarities between them structurally, but the mood in many cases does match, although Mozart's serenade is much longer at about 45 minutes than Strauss's serenade at 10 minutes.
Let's revisit something that we discussed, I think, back in 2019 on a podcast. Enlighten us on what I refer to as the Amadeus ploy, as Inspector Clouseau would say. Let's talk about Mozart's name, or I should say names.
Yeah, well, it's become almost a... when one says Mozart's name, one often says Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. All three names at the same time. And that's how you usually see it in print. And, you know, and I've always asked myself, why? To differentiate him, to make sure we don't mistake him from Wolfgang Johann Mozart or Wolfgang Tony Mozart or something like that? No, there's only one Wolfgang Mozart. We don't need to put the Amadeus. And he actually never used it. Amadeus is the Latin form of his baptismal name, his middle name. He had several baptismal names. Theophilus was Greek. Amadeus was Latin. Amade was French, and Gottlieb was German. And they all mean the same thing: lover of God. And he preferred Amade, the French version with the acute accent on the E, the second to the last E. And when he did sign his name using all three names, he invariably called himself Wolfgang Amade Mozart. So I personally have been on a campaign to not use Amade or Amadeus when I write his name, because we know who this is.
Yeah. Serenade number 10 is, you mentioned this earlier, is sometimes referred to as Gran Partita. Why?
Well, that's a good question. Let's look at the partita part first. A partita is another name for a suite, a collection of pieces, most often dances. And that certainly applies to this, because there are two minuets with two trios, each with two trios involved in this piece. There's a romance, there's an adagio, there's a wonderful rondo at the end. So a collection of movements, okay, that makes it a partita or a suite. The gran partita, which is invariably how people refer to this piece, because first of all, it's nice, easy shorthand. Only one person wrote what could be called a gran partita, and that's Mozart. It's a serenade number 10. But it's grammatically incorrect. And it got its name, Gran Partita, from somebody's handwriting on the score. It wasn't Mozart's. And it certainly wasn't Mozart's, because Mozart would have called it by its proper Italian name. Mozart knew Italian, Grande Partita. And not Gran Partita. That's pidgin Italian or something. But everybody calls it the Gran Partita anyway. So we're stuck with that. It's grand anyway. It's big. It's a big piece.
A big partita.
Yes, that's right.
So you've already sort of described the music, but what else would you like to add about the sound and the texture of this piece?
Well, Mozart decided not to use flutes in this, so the highest woodwind instrument, the top of the texture anyway, is the oboe. Clarinets can play just as high, but he uses the oboe to top the texture in most cases. What's unusual about this piece is the middle register. We have two oboes, two clarinets, and then two basset horns. And basset horns are now instruments that are now obsolete, that are a little bit like alto clarinets. They're pitched in F, the same key as modern French horns are pitched in now. And they function, they have very much the same sound, the same timbre as the clarinets, the higher clarinets, but in a lower register. So the clarinets with this wonderful, famously marvelous soft, rounded tone are doubled and extended downward with the basset horns. So there is a wonderful texture and warmth to this to the sound of this piece that you just don't get with any other work that doesn't use basset horns. Below that, we have two bassoons, the customary two bassoons, four horns, just like Strauss, although they're often used two at a time and sometimes all four together, but there are some movements, only two of them are used. And finally, at the bottom, either a double bass, string double bass, or contrabassoon. Mozart wrote it intending it to be performed with the double bass to add the bottom, the 16-foot instrument bottom to the texture, with the provision that it could be performed also with a contrabassoon if it was performed outdoors or in inclement weather or in where you just had a wind band and no strings available. Certainly in its early performances, it probably was performed in outdoor concerts, outdoor performances. Its provenance is a little bit murky because there are only occasional references to it. And for a while, people didn't know whether he wrote, when he wrote it, or where he wrote it. It's pretty well established now. He wrote it in his early years in Vienna. And how do we know that? Because some of the paper he used, music paper, was the music paper he only purchased once he had moved to Vienna. It was not available in Salzburg, where he grew up. So we knew he wrote this in Vienna. We think he wrote it probably in about 1783 or 1784. And to me, another great clue as to when he wrote it is there are little hints and snippets of melody and themes in here that remind me of, and really are, in some cases, almost quotes from his opera, The Abduction from the Seraglio, which he wrote at that same time. Particularly the rondo, the last rondo has the coda that has a quote from one of the famous coloratura arias from that opera, Martin alla Artin, that the soprano plays in unison with the orchestra right near the end before a final dramatic high C near the end. So it's very much of that era. And that being said, it is a very happy piece. There are some reflective moments in it where particularly the Adagio, a famous, famous movement, the Adagio used in quoted in Amadeus in the movie, for instance, used in a few films and things. One of the most beautiful moments of music ever written. A kind of a dialogue between the solo oboe, solo clarinet, and solo first basset horn. Just gorgeous, gorgeous music with some really beautiful bassoon music thrown in also.
Well, serenades by Strauss and by Mozart. I mean, it sounds like another great program.
One more thing to add.
Yes.
The piece does go on for a while. Like I said, it's about 45 minutes, and there are multiple movements. In actual performance, I would imagine that this probably would have been done in a somewhat informal setting, and probably without each movement being performed immediately after one after another. It might have been stretched out over the course of an evening, or maybe even interspersed with other pieces. It has a kind of an intrinsic informality about the piece. The fairly unusual practice of starting with a minuet with his traditional repeats, and then going to a trio with his traditional repeats, going back to the minuet, then going to another trio, each one contrasting the other, and finally returning to the minuet, performing this big five-part form. That's a little bit unusual, and also harkens back to dance music. So there is an informality. The piece comes off with a kind of a sheen or patina of greatness, almost exaltedness, simply because it's Mozart. But at its heart, this is entertainment. It's just entertainment. Music to make people feel good on a balmy summer evening in Vienna, how it was intended, or on a balmy spring day in Rockford as you, or a summer day in Rockford as you sit in front of your computer or TV set and watch it streaming.
Well, maybe you'll be sitting on your porch watching it.
That would be even better, yes.
Yeah.
As long as the cicadas don't drown you out, drown the music out, if and when they appear.
Yes. Maybe they won't. Well, the June 2021 chamber concert video will be on rockfordsymphony.com beginning in early June. For more information about this concert or any questions, call 815-965-0049 or go to rockfordsymphony.com. Well, thanks, Steve, and thanks to everyone for listening.
Thank you, Phil.